it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to week 7 of the Foot Weekly podcast. It's a gameplay episode and we had Basie Japes on the supporter gameplay episode last week, and I'm a little bit Basie myself, slightly under the weather, but the good news is Japes has recovered and is with us. Welcome back, foot legend Air Japes.
Thank you much, Ben. Base is gone, but cough remains, so hopefully. Actually, that's the glory of editing, is you guys will never know.
Yeah, you're right. They won't. And let's move on to Josh Excels. Welcome back, as pretty much always, Josh.
Yes, yeah, thank you. I'm managing to avoid it, but tis the season for coughs and sniffles, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm sure I'll be getting one of your bassy voices soon.
Probably will be, yeah. And next up, we have Taz, the man, not the only man, as he rightly corrects us when I say this, behind the guide, which does fantastic gameplay guides. It's great, Taz, to have you back on the pod for the first time in FC24. Hello.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm really looking forward to, because, yeah, we haven't talked about FC24 here, or I didn't have the chance to talk about it, so really looking forward to it.
Yeah, definitely. And before we do that, we do have to talk about something else, because it's just become a huge community topic, as you'd expect. Maybe I'll hand over to Josh to do the rundown of what we've seen so far and why people are talking about momentum, scripting, and handicap. And actually, for those who don't know what that is, it's basically the idea that there's some kind of mechanic in the game that EA have implemented to dynamically change particularly the difficulty in the game for one particular player, or to in some way determine the outcome of a game. And it's been something that people have believed, or do believe, is in the game. And recently there's been something that I guess has got people talking about it again, and in their view is clear evidence. Josh, do you want to just take us through what that actually was?
What came out on Monday morning, I think it was post-champs. Somebody was playing their champs games, and in the top right-hand corner of their screen, in the middle of the game, it came up and said, difficulty changed to world-class, and then difficulty changed to semi-pro, twice in the same game. Now, that is something that is in the game. If you play a kickoff mode off Ultimate Team, just in normal kickoff mode in FC, and has been in the game now for a number of years, where the computer wants to make it a competitive game, and so therefore, if you put it on, you know, amateur difficulty and you're absolutely slapping it, it will slowly increase the difficulty to make the game harder for you. And it will tell you with this pop-up in this overlay in the top right-hand corner. And so what we saw was exactly that overlay in the top right-hand corner. And for a number of years, one of the main ways that people have said a scripting or a handicap exists is the fact that you only really control one of your 11 players on the pitch. And so the other 10 are AI controlled. And so if you have your AI difficulty of the what's controlling your players at, you know, ultimate difficulty, they're going to make incredible runs, they're going to be brilliant defensively. But if they're at semi-pro, they're not going to do those things. And that's been one of the main conspiracies of how handicap exists. And this was apparent proof of that happening.
All right. So Josh, do you believe it's real?
No. No, it was interesting. When Ben went to cue me up for this question, he said, you know, maybe you could talk us through why it's become such a big thing. And the answer to that question is because people can't accept the person they're playing is better than them. That's really the answer to the question. That's why scripting handicap and momentum has been a thing. Now, I will say I'm a converted handicap believer. Back in like FIFA 11, 12 days when I was at school and trading all the time. And, you know, Vicente Del Bosque in a 4-1-2-1-2 was an easy thing to trade with. I had the best team in the game that couldn't be a bog standard, like non-rare gold team. And there's part of me that actually still believes there was some handicap back in the day. I don't think that anymore, and I definitely don't think it's involved in the game. And one of the main reasons is we have skill-based matchmaking in every mode now, apart from champs, but that's form-based matchmaking. It's still the same idea. And the reason why you would have some sort of handicap or something that balances the playing field is so that a poorer player doesn't constantly get bull-rushed by better players in the game. If you're in the bottom 5%, they don't want you to lose every game because that's a bad experience. But the moment you have skill-based matchmaking within the game, there's no need to have a script or a handicap in it anymore. And actually, the explanations that people have for why they think it's real fall down under really simple questioning. Like, just the why. Why would you add it to the game? Let's go past the fact that, do you really think something that complicated could be coded into the game and work correctly? We'll see what people think on that. But but for me, it's that sense of it. People go, oh, because they want you to buy more packs. They want you to go to the store. And so having a script that makes your players play worse makes you think you need better players. But what you're missing is the converse of that, which is that it's making the other player feel like they're playing better or that their players are better. And so therefore, why would I need to buy more players? Because the script is going both for and against me. So therefore, the same team will just get the same results because the script is going for and it's all preconditioned anyway. If everyone's winning 50% of their games, regardless of their skill level or the team they're using, why would anybody need to ever go to the store? Because it's not going to improve your... Like, the whole logic of that argument completely falls down under, like, really basic questioning. So, no. Scripting handicap and momentum is a crux people use because they can't accept somebody better beat them.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You got to look at the motive in a lot of cases when investigating something. And actually, the motivation, when you question it, as you say, isn't really there for EA to do this, because actually the way the game's set up anyway leads to this pattern. They don't need it to be there to incentivize people to spend. And actually, the motive for people to believe this exists is really obvious, and that is as an excuse, basically. Taz, as someone who creates gameplay guides, I'm guessing this isn't really something that you would believe existed. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't do this, and it would completely or partly invalidate a lot of what you do, right?
You're right. Like, and to be honest, I get a little bit tired about this whole discussion, which comes up every 2 years, it feels like. Like, obviously, it's still always going on within the community as a discussion, but then, like, every 2 or 3 years, you have something coming up which somewhat proves it or shows it or indicate that it's in the game. But for me, it's not really convincing in any aspect. It doesn't feel like how I play the game, that it's something in there. And like, as Josh already also explained, like, for me, it doesn't make a lot of sense to have it included. And yeah, it's something that I get really tired to actually talk about and discuss it, because it's also, there's not a really a good foundation to actually talk about it and to have a discussion about it, because everybody is somewhat more or less clueless. And just, it's more or less about personal perception, how you feel about the game and what you think about what's happening. And actually, this is not a really good approach to discuss something about, like, what's going on in the game. Mm. So, yeah, I feel like it's a very numbing discussion which doesn't lead to anything.
Yeah, no, sounds like we should move on quickly. Let me just
cover off 3 quick points, right? What was the actual glitch that came up? It was a visual glitch. And if you go, there's no way that could be a visual glitch, I played a squad battles game with NEP the other day, in which we had 3 players stood in the center of the pitch because that's what's on the co-op screen, and they were just stood in the pitch the entire game. The second thing is, I was a bit harsh on saying it's just a crutch because you can't accept that somebody beat you who's better than you. Sometimes it's not that. Sometimes, because this game is a random number generator that, like, displays it as football, you will lose a bunch of 50-50 rolls in a row, or even like 1 of 4 rolls in a row, because that's just probability. And that feels unfair. It's not, it's just probability. And when they go for you, you won't notice it as much. So that is the other reason why that can happen. It's not always because somebody's better than you.
Yep.
The final thing is EA came out following a court case and actively said they do not use any DDA or momentum handicap system in online modes in FIFA. They actively came out and said that as a like legal statement. If they lied about that, they would get in so much legal trouble. It would be very damaging for the company. So is there's just...
Confirmation bias is one heck of a drug. The people that are like hardcore, this exists, I've seen it, or I've felt it, you're never going to... Like their perception is their reality. So there's going to be no changing their minds. But I think on this podcast, we're taking more of a holistic approach and... probably saying, yeah, the belief is not there that this is in the game.
I mean, the biggest thing for me is you have to look at the evidence, the actual evidence that's come out, and really the only kind of proper firm evidence or thing that we have that is actually not just people saying, oh, I feel like this is a thing, or this bug demonstrates that it's a thing, is EA coming out in a court case and saying, we actually do have a patent for dynamic difficulty adjustment. They do have one. But I mean, Japes, you'll know that these big companies... Yeah.
People have patents for all sorts of stuff.
It's to protect yourself in many ways, isn't it?
Yeah, a patent is only as good as your ability to litigate against or like for it or against it. So EA is obviously massive. And if another football game were to be created and use something that did indeed adjust the difficulty... EA would be able to use something like this to like shut them down. So it's a CYA thing. Mm. I don't know if CYA is like an English term, but it's cover your back quarters to make sure that you have all sorts of different like patents for this type of thing, because it helps protect your IP in the long run.
Yeah.
So, or, you know, your business as a whole. So I will transition us here, Ben, because there is something that has been irking me from a gameplay perspective that I can't decide if this is a feel thing on me or if I do think there is some merit to perhaps some type of change that needs to be made. The seeming volume of goals that I score and get scored on me from kickoff feels substantial.
Mm.
My defenders, to me, don't seem... It's like they... Like when you play real... like soccer or football, everybody's like, when you score a big goal in a game, it's like, don't stop, like don't switch off, because there's like a real mental like switch that happens oftentimes when you're in a tough game, you finally get the breakthrough and there's this like mental switch and it's like, oh, finally we scored a goal. Oftentimes, if you don't say switched on, you could be scored against.
Mm.
I end up feeling like my players react that way. But is that tinfoil hat for me?
No, so there is genuinely an issue with kickoff that they tried to correct. Like the way the AI works is that they are standing still and the kind of shape of the team, I think, was always open to being attacked in a way that wouldn't necessarily happen in open play or from other situations. But actually, they then introduced a fix a couple of years ago, which meant that the attacking team just kind of didn't really move from kickoff. But I think it also affected the defensive team as well and made them even more static.
That's backwards.
It makes no sense, that fix.
It's like introducing a problem to solve a problem.
Yeah.
The attacking team not moving, you're introducing a problem for the defensive team not being aware of like what's going on.
Yeah, if you've ever been stood there after kickoff going, none of my players have made a run. You know, if you sprint down the wing from kickoff and none of your players are in the middle or behind you, you're like, wait, what? That's exactly what it is. They've actively stopped your attacking AI for the first like 30 seconds after kickoff because kickoffs are broken.
Yeah. And
so why do you still concede more often?
Yeah. Because the defense is still broken, isn't it?
Like, I just wanted to point out, like James mentioned at the beginning of this whole discussion or talking point, that in real life football or soccer, after you score a goal, you mentally switch off. And actually, like, I feel like this is a huge point when it comes to conceding after kickoff in FC now, because like the thing is with this kind of kickoff glitch where like just one attacker starts a run, you like the attacker just played two passes and then the lob through ball, and then he's all of a sudden through. The thing is, for me, this only works against me if I mentally switch off because I don't pay attention what my opponent is trying to do. So as soon as I'm aware of that, I'm not mentally switched off, and I pay attention, okay, there's a run starting, I have to switch back to a center back. And this is the whole solution. That's the whole fix about this technique. You switch back to a center back, you just follow that run. I think also what is a problem with why this works as good is a lot of players of the whole community, or like of the whole player base right now, play with a high death. And this also comes together with this whole problem around kickoffs, that in the moment, like the game restarts with a kickoff, since you are playing high death, your defensive line and also the midfield tends to push up in this kind of moment. And this makes you even more vulnerable to those kind of deep runs and then also deep lob through balls. So yeah, this comes down, I would say, especially to the case that you have to be aware not to mentally switch off and just follow what the opponent is doing. And then you can, I would say, easily defend it. Like, I'm at the point, it was the case in FIFA 23, I was actually laughing about my opponents still trying to do this very simple kickoff glitch. And like, I score like 4 goals in that game. And like, for 4 times, the opponent just gives me the ball right away back to me, because he just tries this very stupid technique, which actually, if he sees it me defending 2 times, then he should figure it out. Like, it's not going to work against me.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I mean, it's all about being switched on in that situation. And actually, funny enough, Luke messaged and said, "Do you have a kickoff routine? I often find that if I try to go forward, my player gets isolated very easily, often leading to possession being turned over. And in the worst case, I concede from the counter." And I guess this is what we're talking about in terms of the AI not really making runs from kickoff. What would you recommend people do, Taz, from kickoff? Would you say sort of work it around a bit and then your players will start to make runs?
It's a super interesting talking point, because I also find it extremely frustrating, because it's not only just about that your players on their own not starting runs where it makes sense and all that stuff. But I also feel like, and I don't have any confirmation, but I just know how the game responds to certain inputs. For example, I cannot start a run off like just looking at my fullback and starting the run with L1 or LB. It just doesn't happen. I'm not able to, I'm looking specifically towards the player, and the fullback doesn't start the run. So it's very hard to get like the proper attacking movement in those kickoff situations as the attacker. So I would, and also what I would also mention is, if you like at the start of the game have the kickoff and you tend to have a tactic layout or formation where you switch the formation and you switch the positions, then it's even worse, because then your players still have to get to the right position, and then this switch has to happen at some point. So to be honest, like, I think probably the best way to handle this and to avoid those confusing situations where you're not quite sure if your players are actually with you and going to join your attack, like, to avoid it is probably play 1 or 2 switch off sides with your fullbacks, and just to get everybody in the proper positions and avoid this weird phase of the game. And this, to be honest, I feel like this feels very irritating for me as a player. And I would also make a case to just get rid of this weird phase, because this is the moment where I feel like there is something going on, which is like, there's something, some mechanics going on, which hinder me of playing the way how I usually can play. And this is, to be honest, more something in the direction of handicap or DDA. So not the, like the classical case, but something which I feel like isn't the game right now, which in those moments is just it's intended to be a solution for this whole kickoff debate or kickoff glitch. But on the other hand, it just limits my just normal ways of playing an attack after kickoff.
Yeah, it's incredibly frustrating, because I think it really punishes players who are trying to do legitimate kickoffs, essentially.
Mm.
And I remember hearing, you know, the noises coming out from EA at the time were basically that actually there wasn't a huge amount in the idea that there was a kickoff glitch, or that there was more of a chance of you scoring from kickoff. But they felt that the pressure was so great that they needed to do something to try and prevent it. And I honestly think the current system is worse than what it was like before, when they weren't sort of actively trying to stop things happening at kickoff. So yeah, it's a frustration. And I don't know, maybe we'll see something, but it's not going to be this cycle realistically. Let's take a break on that. And we'll be back with a cheeky little player review. Apparently someone's been performing for Japes that he wasn't expecting. We'll be back in just a moment. Hello, welcome back after the break. Let's do a bit of tactics and player chat because, Japes, I know you had a player up your sleeve, which people might not be expecting.
Yeah, if I were to tell you that you could get a player with high work rates, a 5-star weak foot, finesse shot plus for 50K with 95 jumping and 93 strength, would you be interested in that? Probably.
Yeah.
Alexandra Pop's Centurion card might be the best finisher that I have used in this game. Her playstyles are Finesse Shot Plus, Power Header, Bruiser, Travella, Acrobat, Aerial.
Wow.
And I'm playing her, I think I have a finisher on her right now. I'm debating whether or not I want to put a marksman on her. But finisher boosts her agility up to 81 and her balance up to 90. And then she gets 99 positioning, 99 finishing, 98 shot power. If you go the marksman route on her, you get 97 finishing, 98 shot power, and 96 long shots to go with 99 jumping and 99 strength.
Mm-hmm.
She's just like really, really solid and is 50K.
Wow.
It's not like you can't get German links or icon links. And I'm playing her on 2 chem, not on 3. And she's been fantastic for me in Elite. So if you want something a little different, a little bit of fun to try out ahead of the weekend, it's not like you're going to lose coins on this.
She's fodder value. I just seen that.
Wow. And actually, I don't know if people noticed, but Wolfsburg women's have, I think, Jons Dottir, who's one of the best players in the game with Giant Throw. And Giant Throw is actually pretty good. I've seen clips of people using it very effectively, and Pop is pretty good in the air. I guess she's not at all. But yeah, that sounds a fun player to bring up. Any particular player people want to mention apart from that? If not, we can just move into talking tactics briefly. I don't think I've had anyone that's worth it. Oh, actually, I did have a player that I used that I was kind of astonished by. Funny enough, the main dev on foot.gg, he's a big Chelsea fan, and he's been telling me pretty much the whole cycle to use Lauren James, who I'd not used yet. And obviously, you know, she's got 5-star skills. I gave her a try, and she's ridiculous. I mean, if you look at her stats, they are just kind of stupid for an 83 rated. And she has rapid plus as well as quick step. But she has 90 strength, as well as really, really high ball control dribbling, around 90. Only 74 composure, but I was using marksman on her, and the fact that boosts her reactions a bit and increases her strength and ball control and dribbling kind of means the composure isn't so important. And she really can hold off those really physical centre backs very effectively, and is just a totally unique player. So considering she's what, 2K, I feel like she's well worth picking up and giving a try. A lot of fun.
Oh, if we're going for 2K golds, I've got a 2K gold that I want to extol the virtues of.
Oh yeah,
and it's Angel Correa.
Mm.
He has the best 82 rated card I think I've ever seen that isn't a special card. This Correa's got 85 pace, 84 shooting, and 86 dribbling with like 77 passing and 75 physical, like not even bad. But he's only 82 rated. He can play right mid as well as striker and centre forward. 4-star, 4-star. His play styles are technical, flair, and Travella. So no finesse shot, but Travella's arguably just as broken. Technical's a really nice play style to have. And I've been waiting for my first trading move, and I'm thinking of just loading up on as many Correa as I can get my hands on, because the moment he is able to be entered into an Evo, he's just going to end up absolutely unbelievable. Like, I don't get it.
Speaking of Evos, I have been debating whether or not to do the same thing, but with Joao Felix, because I feel like as soon as he can get in an Evo, that's going to be a very, very popular one.
Yeah, they're yet to really include any good 5-star skillers in Evos, I've noticed. I imagine that's quite deliberate.
True.
But we should move on to tactics. And we should ask you, actually, Taz, what are you using at the moment? How are you feeling about tactics this cycle? Any particular things that the listeners might want to note?
Yeah, like I had from the results in the weekend league perspective, not the best start in FC24. So I stick to the things which work for me. Like I need to get my confidence back. So early on, I switched to 4-3-2-1, and like it's a very common, very popular formation. A lot of pros are playing it since like the five at the back formations are banned. And yeah, it's like the typical setup which you play now for 2 years, where you play attacking wise a 4-3-2-1, and defensive wise you make the instruction instructions in a way that you play 4-4-2. It's very boring, but right now it works for me. It gives back my confidence and my ability to play the game. So that's what I'm, yeah, like you have to be honest about it. So yeah, so.
I think it's the hardest formation to play against.
Yeah,
for sure.
100%, yeah. And right now it works for me. And I feel like personally also like I think I have to re-explore some other formations, maybe also some little twists, but right now I didn't have the chance to get enough playing time during the week because I'm not a big fan to switch up and try out something new when it comes to the weekend league itself. So I would rather try out something in Rivals or in the qualification or the playoffs. And I think this is huge for me. I'm a very confidence-based player, so I have to have confidence in my team and as well as the instructions and the tactic setup. So this is my approach to it. And like in the last 1 or 2 weeks, I wasn't really able to get confidence in a different tactic setup.
Ugh, I think that's a smart mentality.
Yeah,
I'll tend to like play weekend league for a while, and I'm like pretty happy and confident with my formation. Then I get tired and lazy, and I'm not playing as well. And then I'm like, this isn't working. It must be the formation. It surely can't be me being exhausted. And what do I do oftentimes towards the end of the weekend? I create some brand new formation, brand new, that I have never played before, and decide that I'm going to finish weekend league with that formation. And then I take it into the next week. And I'm like, this is kind of a terrible setup usually. I don't know what made me think I was going to do well with that. So I think, you know, stick with that.
Yeah, I had a similar thing trying the 3-1-4-2, where it is good. I like it, but I felt like it was really good for a time because it was basically allowing me to be pretty aggressive with my centre backs because you got three of them. And then I kind of realized, actually, I can just do that in a four at the back and it's kind of fine. I just need to be a bit more confident and able to do it. And then I switched to currently playing a 4-4-1-1, brackets two, actually. I quite like having that cam position rather than the center forward. And I've been doing the same thing as I was doing in the three at the back. And actually, I'm sending my right back forward. So that kind of makes it three at the back anyway. And it feels more solid, but also I'm able to be aggressive. So I guess it's easy for formations to kind of flatter to deceive.
Yeah. Speaking of like you talking about sending your fullback forward, the attacking fullbacks instruction is really fun.
Oh, on the D-pad?
On the D-pad, yeah. It works super well.
And you just like flick that on, generally have them on stay back or balance or something?
I just flick, I'll sometimes just leave it on and decide I'm going to just try to like punch someone in the mouth over and over and over again. I did end up Evoing Marcus Llorente.
Boo.
The reason I did it is because I started screwing around with this attacking fullback instruction and he had like 5 assists in like 3 matches or something like that. And I was like, where am I going to get this production elsewhere? Yeah. Like, do I really want to go through the like mental challenge of finding a player that I want to do with this with, that I want to put into my squad to play like the 40 games with? Or do I just do Llorente and don't change a thing?
Mm.
Like literally don't change a thing. Like right now I'm probably 13 matches in to the first level or whatever, and I have 15 assists from right back. So I haven't had to change an actual thing about how I play. It was the least amount of mental effort. This happened when Bonmati won the Ballon d'Or, and I was like, there's going to come a point where I decide to use these Barcelona Spanish women, and at least then I still have some Spanish links.
Mm.
Yeah, I think the logic there makes a lot of sense. One thing I was wondering, and I've been thinking about this in terms of we're talking about player reviews, and Lauren James is very strong, but is only controlled because of her height. And I know, Taz, you mentioned one of the things you'd be interested to talk about is accelerate this cycle. And it's not something we've covered too much, but I was interested to know your take on this and how you're feeling about the different accelerate types. Obviously, we have more, it's more spread out. I feel like as a result, people have taken less note of it, I guess.
Last year, acceleration types were huge. Like it only took a couple of days until like the whole lengthy meta was going on and started, and everybody was so eager to have lengthy players. And obviously it was the case because lengthy was as dominant and was as strong and was so much better, obviously, than the other two acceleration types. And then also we...
Can I just quickly... I also, like quickly with last year, there were, what, 3 total types?
Exactly, yeah.
And so the differences felt massive.
This is my whole point. Like I made the prediction before the release of FC24 with the introduction of four additional acceleration types, even if there will be one acceleration type which will be similar, dominant, like it was in FIFA 23, we won't notice it as much because the differences or the distance between those acceleration types or the differences won't be as huge as it was in FIFA 23 because they have to be a little more separated. And now with seven in total, the differences are closer together. And this, I feel like it's super somewhat interesting to observe it, how it was in FIFA 23, where in the beginning, like there was such a hype about the acceleration types. It was such a big topic and it was like increasing, like leading to a massive increase of the price of Haaland, for example, because all of a sudden everybody noticed how good and strong and OP lengthy is as an acceleration type. Now, after like 1.5 months after the release of FC24, I haven't seen anything about acceleration types, anything. Yeah. I haven't seen anyone talking about it. And I feel like this is like this kind of change is super, super interesting for me because you would think there might be some I don't know, experiments or like observations that, well, this acceleration type still is better than the others, but I haven't seen anything like it.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, I agree. And I don't think I've been particularly looking that carefully at moving players between acceleration types like I was doing last cycle. But I think it is quite noticeable, certainly on centre-backs that are lengthy, they do take a lot longer to get going. And I have myself found it not particularly great to have two fully lengthy centre-backs because sometimes they can get caught out over a shorter distance. If you've got someone like, I don't know, Varane, who's Trash Panda Plus, is obviously going to come in and save him in a lot of situations. It maybe doesn't matter so much. But I know, Josh, this is something we've actually discussed. And when we were playing Varane and Rudiger, we weren't necessarily so happy with it. And having Militao in instead for one of them seemed better.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's the area of the game I think I notice it more than anywhere else. By the flip side, somebody who's fully explosive, you do notice that first few steps, especially like with a decent attacker. Like one of the gameplay things somebody told me about and I've started adding in and I really noticed the difference is just tapping the left bumper L1 when you receive the ball. And I've felt way more controlled in terms of receiving it and then being able to move out of it. And when you have an explosive player who's then at a complete standstill, that first step is so rapid and you can get up to speed so quickly. Mm. It does then like diminish over time, but I think they've done a good job with accelerate types in that they are not the be-all and end-all as they felt like they were at the beginning of last year. I know there was some people who raged against the dying of the light in terms of the lengthy meta, but I think they've done a good job in terms of separating it out so it's not something you overly focus on. But I definitely feel like if you're constantly getting like beasted in behind and you feel like your centre-backs can't catch up, if they're both fully lengthy, that's probably one of the explainers as to why.
Oh, have you guys made the mistake at all of using the advanced defending, what is it, the seal out, trying to do that against Haaland?
I have, yeah.
No, not yet.
It didn't go well.
I have accidentally done this a few times where I'm like in great CLF position and you just like run into him and you're like falls down. It's honestly, it feels so good. Like I'm not even mad when it happens. I just end up feeling like, oh, that was so dumb. Mm. So insanely dumb. But like, that's the point. It's like, if I try to do that with like a quicker, weaker player, like that should absolutely happen to me.
Yeah, actually talking of advanced defending, seal outs and that sort of thing, something we want to come back to on the podcast at some point soon. So if you have any questions on defending, then send them in via all the usual ways. And let's take a break and we'll be back with Taz's mystery question. Hello, listener. An important thing to say here is that there's a 36,000 FC point giveaway going on the Patreon, and not only that, but there's a free trial as well, so you can get access and listen to support episodes for a limited window, and then if you'd like to, you can continue to stay and support for just £3 a month, and you'll get double the podcast content.
There really has never been a better time to support if you've been considering doing so. And the way you can find that is by just searching Support Foot Weekly or following the link in the description of this podcast. You can also go to bit.ly/morepod. It'd be a pleasure to have you as a supporter of the pod. And if you consider doing so, a huge, huge thank you. Let's jump back into the podcast.
Welcome back to the final part of this pod. And now we'll have Taz ask his mystery question, which he really has kept a mystery. I'm intrigued. What is the question?
I would like you guys to guess how many different passing techniques do you have in FC24? Just a number. Like, just give me the number.
Yeah, listeners at home have a guess as well.
And just take a guess, basically. Because I think you won't be able to count through all the different techniques.
15.
Whew. I feel like that's a lot, though.
Okay.
Yeah, he just wanted to get
Yeah, 12.
Yeah. I'm gonna go 8.
Only 8.
Okay. Oh, so there's a lot.
There are like 3 or 4 different crosses.
Oh, I thought we were talking just ground passes, like no crossing, no.
Yeah,
balls
for sure.
Oh, okay.
No. Okay, like every way how you can distribute the ball. This can be long balls, that could be ground passes, that could be through balls, that can be. Yeah, I think I already mentioned crosses. So
precision adds at least another 3 in
there.
So maybe
like
as well.
More like 17 or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to put us out of our misery then?
So we counted it because we also made a video about it. Since I was reading through the pitch notes and what was coming in FC24, and like it was already the development in the last couple of years. There was a lot of remapping in terms of controls for dribbling and also sometimes for passes and crossing techniques and all that stuff. And when I was reading through it, and there was so much remapping, and I get at some point I was so confused about it as well, about all the different options that you can do. I was like, okay, I think it makes sense to actually have a video which just lays out all the different passing techniques that are in the game and explain like, how do you use it? Like, what does this kind of pass accomplish? And like, what is the input for it? Because, for example, a driven through ball, which was an R1 triangle on PlayStation, now is on L1 plus R1 on triangle. So like these kind of remaps can be really confusing. And that can also be too challenging for you as the player holding the controller in the moment, because you only have a small time window to actually do the input. So like, coming back to my question, we counted and we have a video with 24 different passing techniques. And actually we forgot one, which was the flare of fancy passes. So we don't have this in the video, but we have like 24 different passing techniques right now in the game. And this would be the discussion now, and I already brought it up a little bit, because sometimes right now in the game, like I tried out swerve passes, I tried out precision ground passes, I tried out precision lob passes, I tried out lobbed through balls. You have a lot of different solutions at hand for different, like for the same in-game situation to play a pass. And I think at some point you as a player get to, I would say, to a limit of how many different passing techniques you are actually able to manage in your brain and that you're able to actually do in-game, to have it like the combination at hand. Because sometimes I just press a certain combination, which I maybe did already in the game or like which I'm more accustomed to right now. And in the moment, I might not be able really to know what will be the outcome of it.
Yeah.
I know it's just a pass which can help me. And I feel like with this sheer amount of different passing techniques, I think like there's a limit in what we can actually handle. So how do you feel about this?
You're totally right. That is like an overwhelming amount of different options. And I often find that I'll play a pass and be like, actually, do you know what? I probably could have done this pass and it would have gone better.
Yeah.
And I know in kickoff, you can actually rewind the play, can't you? And you can do it again. And sometimes I wish I could like try a different pass in that same situation to see whether it would be better. But it's really hard to know what makes sense in what situation.
I have a constant debate in my head of like, oh, how do I do that pass again? Because I just, there are certain passes that I feel like I should be using more. Like we talked about it on here that one time, there's like the L1, R1, driven, curled thing or whatever.
Oh yeah, that's what Taz just mentioned, and isn't it? I'm like, threaded three pass, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's one where I'm like, I know I should do this more, but I end up doing it too much and then just kind of like remove it because I'm like, am I supposed to use this every time that I want to use a through ball? Well, like probably not. But also like, I don't know. I think it's like, there's like an overwhelming amount of options. Part of me is like, that's great. I would rather have this than the alternative where you can't do like the different passes. But like on the flip side, now I stick to like a couple tried and true, you know, setups that I probably could do like a little bit more with.
Yeah.
But don't.
I think we could remove a lot of the options and just have the new precision pass as that option. Like if you really want to play a threaded through ball, then you got to use precision pass. That seems kind of fair. Taz, actually, it'd be interesting to hear, are there any particular passes you feel people should do a bit more of and are effective this year that they may not be doing currently?
You asked the tough questions because I'm also still in the debate phase I have an inner conflict about what kind of passes I should use. I think, to be very honest, I should also maybe fall back to the just easier, simpler passes. I think there, for every kind of passing technique, there is a niche where it's going to excel, where it's going to be the best option. But I think it's too challenging to actually identify in just like a small time window of a few milliseconds or half a second, what is the best pass or best passing option or technique for it. And then also be able to just from the motoric component or aspect to actually pull it off successfully. Like I think this is too much. And most often, like probably quite sadly, if you just, for example, go with a lob through ball, it won't be the best option, but most likely has still a decent chance to work. So maybe stick to the more simple passes. And then, for example, at some point, and I think this is also quite natural when it comes to playing the game, by the way, is that you will have a bias towards a certain technique that you just used recently or that you start using. For example, I had a phase where I was really in love with a precision lob pass, like the R1 and square or RB plus X. Mm. It's, I think, a very powerful kind of like, it's a precision lob pass, similar to the normal precision pass, but just lobbed. It's, I would say, really powerful, but also there will be situations at which you will make your life too hard trying to make it use. Yep. And if you just go for the lob through ball, it would accomplish the same thing without this potential that you screw up with bad power, with bad aiming and all that stuff. So probably stick to the more simple passes like lob through balls, driven through balls, just the triangle options basically. And maybe I think there will be also situations for the swerve through pass. But yeah, this, like, as I said, like you can make a case for every passing technique, I would say.
Yeah, I do think it's worth, you know, I guess recommend that video that you put out and say, do have a look and maybe there is one pass or a particular pass that you're immediately like, oh, I could use that in these situations. And I think if you're playing something like, I don't know, squad battles or you're very comfortable in a match, then it is definitely worth giving these a try because there are situations where they're really useful. And actually, precision lob pass is super satisfying to do as well. Like I do it just because it's fun.
Yeah. This is, I would say, a super important aspect of playing the game. Like it should not always be the case that you just try to maximize results. I would say like this is not the best approach to playing the game. Like just trying out different passing techniques, have success and also failure with it. And as you mentioned, like playing successful precision lob passes, like even though you could have maybe potentially get the same outcome with a just lob through ball, for example, it's so much more satisfying if it works with a precision lob pass. And I feel like this can also contribute to your whole playing experience. And we all should try to have also fun playing the game and have those little moments of success.
Mm. Yeah, I think it depends on like, so I'm guilty of this where I think it's really, really fun when I pull those off. Like part of me wants my opponent to be aware that I just hit a manual pass. That makes sense?
Mm.
Because oftentimes what'll happen is I'll like, say I mess one of those up, then I get mad and I'm like, why would I do that?
Mm.
Like, why did I make that? Like, why did I go for the manual pass there when I like didn't need to?
Yeah.
The downside feels higher than the upside in many of the game modes. And so it's better to de-risk and just play the like assisted pass. Yes, not as rewarding, you know, perhaps not as fun, which is why I'm like, just throw in a, like, I don't know, throw in a halo or something like that when you hit a manual pass or, because then people, I would be like, oh, dang, like that was a nice pass, dude.
I do agree with that. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's also one of those things where if you see someone doing it, you'd then do it. You know, you'd be like, oh yeah, that's a lot of the learning I do is from people I play.
Yeah. You might be like, how is he? Well, now I know how he did that. That was manual. Like I can't pull that pass off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Occasionally I'm like, is the guy doing this or is this guy just hitting like, has this guy just put hug sidelines on his wingers and just hitting over the manual over the top through balls over and over and over again? Or is this like some AI like kickoff nonsense that I need to be wary of. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, is it just the opponent that's hitting these passes, or is this like something in the game I need to be cognizant of?
Yeah, it's a interesting topic, passing. I mean, as you pointed out, there's so many different options, Taz, and so many ways to do it. Again, people should check out that video and get in touch if you have a particular pass you're using that's really effective, or any questions about passing for the podcast. No doubt Taz will have you on again, I hope, to talk about these topics and more. It's been great to get your insights on gameplay in 24. And actually, where can people find your content? Because we've mentioned it a few times, but not exactly where, I think.
So we are mainly present, like the best content we have either on YouTube, like just search for the guide on YouTube, the guide FC or something like this, and the Guide Plus app. You can just find it if you look for the Guide Plus in your app store.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Taz. It's been great to have you on.
It was a pleasure. It's always fun to talk about those things.
Yeah, indeed. And Josh as well, been great to have you back on the podcast. Thank you for coming on.
Yes, yeah, been a lot of fun. Like, just I didn't really say anything in the passing portion there. Just I felt like everyone else had it covered. But if you have incisive pass as a play style, those precision through balls are very, very difficult for your opponent to intercept. Something worth testing out.
Nice. And then James as well. Thank you very much as always for coming on the pod.
Cheers, Ben. Pleasure.
Yeah, certainly has been, and a pleasure to have you along, listener. If you would like to subscribe and you haven't done so already, then you can do so via the various different podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc. And of course, if you'd like an extra podcast every single week, you can become a supporter initially as part of a 7-day free trial. And if you'd like to continue, it's just £3 a month. It really does keep the podcast going. And a huge thank you to all those supporters who are keeping the podcast going, including those Icon patrons.
Dave B, Hugh J, Darren W, Alistair M, Dom P, Rob P, Jeff B, Damon H, Tom B, Adam G, Neil P, Alex M, Jake S, Dan W, Roger D, Lee A, Andrew C, Nishant, Waterman, Dylan H, Adam R, Rob L, Brendan W, Michael K, David G, Jimmy K, Michael B, Aditya S, and Joshua K.
Plus a special thanks to Luke M, Dave B, Hugh J, Tom M, Darren W, and Pato Foot for advice and production assistance. Before I leave you, just one more thing to add, though. FIFA's a bit like life, really. It has its many ups and its many downs. If you're having a few more downs than ups in real life in these more difficult times, then please don't feel that you're alone or need to struggle on without taking action. If you go to thecalmzone.net, there's loads of resources, advice, support, or even just a friendly chat for anyone who needs it. If it sounds like it could help you, then head over to thecalmzone.net. And for now, have a good one, and I'll catch you on the next podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.